I want to thank the elders and thank Bart for this wonderful opportunity to speak to you all. It's always a privilege to come here. Several of you have got to know and speak to through the years have said how much they enjoy this time. And I want you to know Sherry and I, she couldn't be here today. She's taking care of grandchildren. But Sherry and I, we just leave so pumped up and excited about the help that you have given us, the encouragement, and on so many different levels, your prayers, your collecting of shoes, as Bart mentioned, your helping to drill wells and the saving of souls, because the end game is not good works. The end game is that they know Jesus Christ, the good news. And so I'm so thankful to be here this morning. A couple of weeks ago, I was out in Reno, Nevada, and I was with Jesse and his family. So it was good to speak about you all and in fond terms. John chapter 2, verse 12, verse 11, verses. On the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. And when the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine." "Dear woman, why do you involve me?" Jesus said, "My time has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." And nearby stood six stone water jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding if you worked it out, it'd be from 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus said to the servants, "Fill the jars with water." And so they filled it to the brim. And then he told them, "Now draw some out and take it to the master of the banquet." And they did so. And the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine, and he did not realize that where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. Then he called the bridegroom aside and said, "Everyone brings out the choice wine first and then the cheaper wine after the guests have too much to drink, and you have saved the best till now." This, the first of the miraculous signs Jesus performed at Cana in Galilee, he thus revealed his glory, and his disciples put their faith in him. You know, I read that passage many times when I was a younger person, and it kind of didn't emphasize verse 11 or it didn't stick with me. But that last phrase, "and his disciples put their faith in him." Michelle, she works at a 7-Eleven. She met this fine young guy who then proposed to her at the 7-Eleven. She likes him. She likes her customers. She likes working at the 7-Eleven. So what would you do? You would get married in the asphalt in front of the 7-Eleven with her bouquet of flowers in a super gulp cup. And of course, the reception, well, it's there because Slurpees and hot dogs are on a discount price. And then there's the dump. You know, in Maine, one couple first met at the transfer station. It was his first day to work. It was her first day to come and bring her recycling. Well, where would you get married? Well, it's where we met. And they stood in the front end loader and they were married. Unforgettable weddings. You know, most weddings that we go to, and if you've lived long enough, you've probably gone to several. And like Bart and myself, have probably conducted many through the years. You know, most weddings are forgettable. I don't mean that in a negative term. I mean, the family that plans them and the couple that, you know, works out all the little nuances that they want to do at their wedding, that's memorable to them. But they kind of run together unless something goes awry that they did not plan. Like I had a best man who just fainted. I don't know why he fainted. The groom should be fainting, you know? But he fainted. Or I just saw Ed Duthie in Zimbabwe a few months ago, and that was the first wedding I ever went to. I was 12 years old, and I could still see Ed. He dropped the ring, and it went under the front pew, and I could still see him crawling, going to get it. Or the bridesmaid at one of the weddings I did. Felt so sorry for her, because she was walking up towards the front doors of the building and she tripped over a dress and fell into the newly watered flower bed. Those things stay with you. Memorable weddings. Jesus is invited to a wedding. It's going just normal. It could be considered an unforgettable wedding. By the way, can I just back up or go off on a tangent for just a minute? Jesus the Christ and his mother, they invited to a wedding. And one of the reasons I believe is because they bring joy. Which got me to thinking about us who are children of God, saved by his grace. We are given the wonderful privilege to share Jesus to a lost and dying world. Do we bring joy? When people see us, are they glad to be with us? joy is brought to this wedding because Jesus is there. But now it's about to become an unforgettable wedding because the cry goes out, there is no more wine. Now I want to tell you right now, when it comes to this day and time and its traditions, it was bad. It's about to become critical. People would talk about this for ages if something wasn't done. And we read the passage of Mary goes to them, and I'm reading between the lines, but I bet Mary, when she was communicating with them, probably said, my son can do anything, you know, and he certainly can. Would you get the water pots? And he does. And if you gauge the water pots, he probably produced between 105 to 108 to 180 gallons that was changed from water into wine. I'm not talking about that. That's my foundation. But what does this wedding mean to us? Well, it means that Jesus revealed his glory and his disciples believed in him. And it means that he changed water into wine. But it means farther than that, because this is recorded in the Gospel of John to take us much further than turning water into wine. This was a distinct change. There was nothing fake about this. And what the message is to us is that's what Jesus does for all humanity who are willing to come and surrender their lives to him. I will change you. There'll be nothing false or nothing superficial about it. It will be distinct. It will be transformative. If you will surrender to me. Some are afraid to go through that door of invitation. And there are some reasons for that. Some people see, number one, opportunities are often disguised as problems. Opportunities are often disguised as problems. It was the brilliant cartoon philosopher Pogo who once observed, gentlemen, we are surrounded by insurmountable opportunities. Too often we perceive obstacles, see it as obstacles instead of seeing it as opportunities. I was in Bart's class this morning and enjoyed so much what he had to say, but I was in the new wing and several said to me, it's already used. The whole wing is already used. You know, what a lovely problem to have here, you know. You saw it as an opportunity, not an obstacle. Here is a few slides I want to show you that I think demonstrates this point several thousand miles away. Next. Our dad project, we're up to 62 wells. Somebody came up to me and said, Dorian, how's the opportunities for drilling water and sharing Jesus going? I said, when I was here last year, we had 59. We're now 62. Our promise and our goal was 50 wells in 10 years. We're not up to 10 years yet. We're up 10 years in February of next year, you know. So we're thankful for that. Next. The clean water that you see, you know, they got smiles on their faces, these girls. The reason they got smiles on their faces is because they don't have to walk 2 or 3 miles anymore. Next. How do you like those vegetables? That's with when you bring the well, then you have drip irrigation, and then you got people with smiles. That's, boy, wouldn't that be some serious fried green tomatoes? I mean, serious. Look at that cabbage. There's no fertilizer here. They just haven't tapped into the ground before because they haven't had that kind of water. Next. We got our clinic. You know, when I was here last time, we had built the clinic. The clinic had not been, we had had everything done. Let me just say this, that opportunities can sometimes seem like obstacles. We had drilled a well in this area, and the government leaders came to us and said, we have no clinic. We have people dying all the time, elderly and children. The closest clinic is 25 miles away, and we don't have any transport. And could you just do this? Is there any possibility we could do a clinic? And so we built the clinic. And then we had a hiccup for about 6 or 7 months on trying to get it approved so we can function. Everything was already licensed and everything. And we got it done. And now it's up and running. Next. I want you to see one of the babies that were born. In fact, one of the 81 babies that have been born since last September. But our reason I want you to see this baby, because I want you to see the house that the mother and the baby and the father live in. Can you call that a house? I mean, those are the people that we are working with. The nurse is an amazing lady, the wonderful woman in the pink dress, because to go to some of these villages, of which the clinic serves 20 of them, you have to go down paths. There's no roads, and so she has a scooter. And she goes down on her scooter, you know. Next. When Jesus invites people, some people might back off because they see that obstacles are, they don't see it as opportunities. But opportunities are often time sensitive. I mean, we've got to seize the moment, seize the time. In fact, our whole lives are that way, aren't they? I mean, you think how fast our lives go, and James says that we're like a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. I can still see my mother's kettle, because we've got British background to us. We love our tea, 10 o'clock in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. And I can still see that, you know, that steam so strong when it comes out of the spout, and then it just fades away, is what James is talking about. That's our lives. Jesus is challenging us. Use your time now that you have to glorify Him. Begin early as a teenager or as a preteen and give your life to Jesus, and don't look back. Oh yes, there'll be mistakes and there might be problems on the way, but just keep focused on Him. Next. So we've shipped 32 containers and you've been a part of it. And we've done it in 9 years, and we've got two more that we're loading right now, and I want to thank you all so much for making that happen. Next. There is boxes that you have sent that are on heads of Africans that are going, taking it to their villages, and they wanted to know, listen to this, they wanted to know if they could keep the boxes to put their clothes in. That's their chest of drawers, a dull banana box. Next. There's my wife with the 1,200 orphans we feed. 2 years ago, we were feeding 800. But now we are feeding in South Africa and Lesotho and Swaziland, and Lesotho is a new country that we have just added. And just let me say this, that in the last 5 years, because we started with them young, the last 5 years we've had 47 of them now that are older teens in Zimbabwe that have obeyed the gospel, and 25 in other countries, because we're not just giving them physical food. Next. And so this year, we have had this many immersed into Christ in 10 years. We are so thankful that these thousands have come to the Lord. And that is a well that we drilled. And so the well is not only used to provide water for people to drink, but also to immerse people into Christ. And we are thankful for that. Next. And so we have Amazon Christian Academy. And that's a picture of my family. That's my daughter with the blue cap on. That's her husband and her two sons. And the reason I bring it up is that my daughter's been in Christian education for the last 15 years. And so she helped me put together our constitution, our student handbook, and our faculty handbook. And the little boy in the middle there, their youngest son, he drew up some drawings for the school. And we've used him. And then our son, our oldest grandson, has come 3 times this year to Africa with us. And those two boys came to me very serious. They said, "Granddaddy, we just want you to know that one day when you go home to heaven, we will continue Partners for Africa." And I said, "Don't rush me." Next slide. So this is the school that we're building. This is a Christian school. You talk about opportunities that are time sensitive. We drilled the well. We built the clinic. And then I noticed there was no high school. And now they've given us 70 acres for a high school, which you know. And now we have finished the first phase. We're on the second phase. You'll see number one is the auditorium. Number four, it represents all the, well, we're on two tracks. We're on an academic track and we're on a technical track. And number four has the buildings with metalwork and woodwork and agriculture. The buildings 2 and 3 are all academic, and 5 is athletic. It's a 70-acre campus that we are so thankful for. Next. And this is our board, and this is our faculty that are going to begin, Lord willing, January 2019. The guy on the far right is a young man who came from Zimbabwe, and you know him. I mentioned him before in Kosi Salati in Pofu, and He was president of Fried Hardman, president of the student body, and now he's heading back to be principal of the school there, and we are excited about that. Next. Opportunities are usually missed, we know, because of fear. Some of you know about what's happening in Zimbabwe right now. We see it as a positive. When God threw that out to us, there was passages that came to my mind. I mean, as far as that thought about missed opportunities, the Bible talks about that, that we seize the day. We seize the moment. For God did not give us a spirit of timidity, but a spirit of power and of love and of self-discipline. 2 Timothy 1:7. Never will I leave you and never will I forsake you. Hebrews 13:5. See, I have placed before you an open door that no one can shut. I know that you have little strength, yet you have kept my word and not denied my name. Revelation 3:8. You got opportunities that come our way, and our culture is moving away, it seems, away from a godly lifestyle. And in Africa, they are challenged to live a godly lifestyle, to come out of a lot of what is paganism. And we need to have courage and without fear and share Jesus Christ. Next. So I just want to share this couple with you. You know, I was sitting with Bart up front on the pew there, and I said, you know, Bart, I still reflect from time to time the time I spent with your grandfather, Brother Thomas B. Warren. And I said, I was just 18 years old and a student at Hardin University, and I spent a week with him at a camp, Camp Happy Hollow in Springfield, as we were as he was helping to prepare us going into the Northeast, we Hardin campaigners, for the summer. Equally is this man, Austin Vimba, as far as his impact on God's kingdom in Africa. I met him when I was 11 years old, and he was 15. He and his wife became Christians. In fact, he followed his uncle around, who was a gospel preacher. And he said, I want to preach like my uncle. And so he met a Christian woman, and they served the Lord. And he got to a point in his life where he said, I don't have enough education, a formal biblical education, and I want to go to America. And he had just got a newspaper from Basil Overton, a world evangelist, and he said, I want to go to International Bible College, which is now Heritage Christian University. And so he was a successful businessman already. He had buses that would take people from city to city. And so he said to his wife, I'm going to sell the buses. I'm going to leave money for you and the children. You go stay at your parents, and I'm going to go to America, and I'm going to go. I'll have enough money to pay it for a round-trip ticket and for one here at IBC, and I believe after that God will take care of us. And God did. And God brought over his wife, and through brothers and sisters like us that helped them to come over and go to school with their father and husband. And he went back, and he established a congregation in a high-density area, 1.6 million people, and the church grew to, just over a short period of years, up to 600, and then it went down to 300, and then it went back up to 500, and go down to 200, and then it go back up to 600, and all the time he was seeing where people were coming from the high-density areas, and he'd say, you go start a church there, and you go start a church there, and from that one Jerusalem church came 15 other congregations. And so Sherry and I, we were all reflecting on this in March, and I came back home, Sherry and I. And he was at a wedding. He loved weddings. He loved to do weddings, be at weddings. And the couple were married. And at their reception, he said, I want the Zulu song sung, the song that sings about how the couple must give their lives to Jesus Christ, and he will be with them throughout their marriage. And so everybody got up and sung it. The whole congregation sung it there at the reception. And he sat down, and about 20 minutes later, he put his head on a brother's shoulder, and he passed away. So Sherry and I flew back. There were 3,000 at his funeral. Never been to a funeral that large before. Gospel preacher of the Churches of Christ, 3,000 people at his funeral. And they asked me to speak, and I spoke. And after I was finished speaking, they opened up the casket, and they said, everybody can come pass by. Do not stand. There's not enough time, because we've got to bury the body 50 miles away at this home cemetery. And so people came by. And while they were filing by, there was 30 preachers that got up, and stood behind me, and they sang the whole time, 45 minutes as people filed by. They never took a break. They went from one song to another. I told Sherry I could have stood there the whole day because of their bass and their tenor and their passion. It was just amazing. They were all preachers that he had taught and he had mentored. In fact, we figured out that Brother Austin Vimber established 65 congregations in his lifetime. No telling how many he immersed into Christ through the years. There was a mile long cars and buses that's going to the cemetery 50 miles away. Now, why do I bring that up? I bring that up because he was a man that had no fear. He would go to the authorities and he'd say, you know, we're not into politics. He says, we're just about sharing Jesus Christ. You need to give us land here so we can build a church building because we will help the community. He'd go straight into their offices and do that. Now, not all of us will have that particular position in life, but we all have a certain position and we can all make an impact for Jesus Christ. And know that it is time sensitive, but it's going to take courage on our part. Yes, and we must know how to approach people. And we must come from a position of love and care. We care about you. We love you. And we believe that Jesus is the answer. Can I just share him with you? However you want to do that. God wants us to make a difference. And every soul is precious. This year, we have immersed over 700 into Christ, and we haven't heard the end of it. And so I want to thank you all so much for the tremendous help and encouragement that you have given us through the years and continue to give us. And I just want you to know that your work here is just as important as what we're doing in Africa. And I pray for this church, and I pray you'll continue to be strong and to be this wonderful light in this community, and to continue to have your global outreach. And God bless you all. In Galatians chapter 3, verse 27, Paul says, for as many of you as have been baptized into Christ have put on Christ. So we know that it's not just an immersion in water. We understand that because of the burial and resurrection of Jesus Christ, and we follow that. But it's putting on Christ so that our lives will be forever changed. Water into wine? Listen, let me tell you, that's nothing compared to what I could do for you. Won't you come as we stand and sing?